Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Typically, I record these episodes on Thursday and have them ready to go on Friday. This week, I've got a busy Thursday, and so I'm recording this one day prior on Wednesday. The reason I bring that up is just to say that if anything happened in the last 24 to 48 hours, I will not have been able to include it in this episode. Some things are moving quite fast right now, and so there may be some stuff here that's outdated even over just the last couple of days. So forgive me if so. I will try as much as possible to keep these as up-to-date as I can, typically. So let's dive in. Let's talk about all the ways, to start off, that Donald Trump is trying to make himself a king. Because I dare say that this week he made it even more obvious than ever that that is his intention. First, from a site called truthout.org, Trump administration defies court orders to resume food aid for 42 million Americans. Two judges ordered the USDA to use contingency funds to keep SNAP benefits flowing during the shutdown. So there were federal judges who said, you have to do this. It is not a choice not to fund this with the contingency funds that are in place for such a situation. Previously, Trump and the Republicans had said, hey, well, we want to be able to use these contingency funds. This is the Democrats' fault. We don't have the legal basis to be able to use these funds. We need, you know, approval from the courts in order to do this. So it's not going to happen. Well, now the courts are not just giving approval, they are making it a demand. And Trump tweeted out essentially that they were going to ignore that and that they would not be funding SNAP benefits until the shutdown was over. So Donald Trump is choosing to starve out 42 million Americans, many of whom are children, who are elderly, and a very large percentage of which are people who work full-time jobs. Instead of looking at ways to fix the issues, he seeks only to make them worse in order to make the Democrats look bad, or at least to attempt to. And luckily, I think that for the most part, that mission is failing, as more and more people, according to polling, are blaming Republicans for this shutdown rather than Democrats. From MSNBC.com, quote, if it was anybody else, we'd arrest him tomorrow, Justice Department aide said of Trump. This is in reference to, if you remember all the way back to when documents were found at Mar-a-Lago, cases full of them, which he had removed from the White House or Pentagon and stolen, obviously very inappropriately. It says a handful of documents found by the FBI at Mar-a-Lago were so sensitive that even a senior Justice Department official didn't have authorization to see them. The point of this article being that this Justice Department aide said, if this wasn't the President of the United States or if this wasn't Donald Trump, we would have arrested him or we would arrest him by tomorrow. But hey, instead he gets away with whatever he wants. The Supreme Court made sure that any act committed as a presidential act is immune, and I would love for someone to explain to me how that does not make him king. And you could say, well, hey, Joe Biden had the same authority, right? Any act, presidential act, was immune. Okay, well, Joe Biden was playing by the rules, at least for the most part. He was not trying to become a king. This is a power that, if wielded inappropriately, as it is being done by the Trump administration, can do irreparable harm to our society. Trump claims it's illegal for late-night host to mock him. This is a Truth Social post that Donald Trump sent. It says this, Seth Meyers of NBC may be the least talented person to perform live in the history of television. In fact, he may be the worst to perform, live or otherwise. I watched his show the other night for the first time in years. In it, he talked endlessly about electric catapults on aircraft carriers, which I complain about as not being as good as much less expensive steam catapults. On and on he went, a truly deranged lunatic. Why does NBC waste its time and money on a guy like this? And then in all caps, he says, no talent, no ratings, 100% anti-Trump, which is probably illegal. So, folks, you heard it from Donald Trump's, I was going to say mouth, but I guess from his keyboard, his phone, that being anti-Trump is probably illegal. Will he do anything about that in this case with Seth Meyers? Well, that was a one-time True Social post, and he's moved on for now. We're going to touch on the Democratic landslide victories in the mayoral and gubernatorial races in just a moment. But this morning, being Wednesday, November 5th, Donald Trump had a bit of a meltdown in a press conference that he did in reaction. Several interesting quotes came from this, one of which was, quote, "Now, if we do what I'm saying, they, being the Democrats, will never, most likely never, take power again." He's talking about things like killing the filibuster, which he has advocated for very much recently, which would make it so that less of a majority was required in order to push through Republican requests in Congress. This is referred to as the nuclear option. He's talking about packing the Supreme Court and making sure that Democrats are not allowed to do that. He's talking about stealing, you know, through gerrymandering, more House seats, on and on and on, sending the National Guard to polling locations, terrorizing minorities, all of these things that he's trying to do to get people to not vote in the upcoming elections, or to make it so that their votes don't matter. In that same meeting, he talked about how with his meeting with President Xi, he said, quote, "During the meeting, he's here and he's got about six people on each side and every one of those people were at attention. And I made a comment to one of them and it got no response. And President Xi didn't let him. I said, I want my cabinet to behave like that. I've never seen men so scared in their lives." And the reporters laughed because it was so funny to hear President Trump talk about how he wishes that his cabinet would be so scared of him that he could control them into not saying a word to anyone about anything. Okay, this is just a small handful of the things that Donald Trump has done or said this week that show that he wants to become an all-powerful dictator. The unfortunate part is that he has made significant gains in securing that power for himself up to this point. When it comes to Trump's lashing out in threats of violence and actions of violence outside of the U.S., there was admissions this week from the Pentagon that it has no idea who's on the supposed drug boats that are being bombed. A Democratic lawmaker revealed the shocking detail after a Pentagon briefing from members of Congress. This is in the NewRepublic.com. Speaking to CNN on Thursday, Democratic Representative Sarah Jacobs said she was told in a Pentagon briefing, quote, that they do not need to positively identify individuals on the vessel to do the strikes. And that was part of the reason why the administration has not sought to detain or prosecute the survivors of the strikes, because they could not satisfy the evidentiary burden. The U.S. has now killed at least 61 people in more than one dozen airstrikes on boats. It says the attacks have prompted criticism from countries in the region, including Colombia, Venezuela, and Mexico, and several of the people killed in the strikes have been identified as fishermen. And that leads us to factcheck.org, where it talks about, it assesses the facts and legal questions about the U.S. strikes on these alleged drug boats. I will link to that, but it kind of highlights this idea that it is definitely not legal, that there are unanswered questions about who is being struck in these attacks, and now we know the Pentagon themselves don't even know. And interestingly, it highlights that the drugs that the U.S. administration that is claiming are being moved through these boats are ones that typically do not come from Venezuela or Colombia, and ones which are not typically moved by boat. And that calls into question the intelligence that Hegseth claims they have about the strikes they're performing. And lastly, on this front, Trump went on a Twitter rant this week, basically saying, telling the military to prepare for action against Islamist militants in Nigeria. He threatened to revoke funding to Nigeria, any sort of aid, and to also send in troops because he claims that there is a targeted attack on Christians in the nation. According to the BBC, groups monitoring violence say there is no evidence to suggest that Christians are being killed more than Muslims in Nigeria, which is roughly evenly divided between followers of the two religions. And once again, we have not heard from Trump on this since his tweet. And another news source says that he essentially watched a segment from the Hannity show, which is what sent him down this loophole to publicly tweet out this threat. We have a president of the United States, one of, if not the most powerful person in the world, who tweets out grave threats based on his mood and based on any sort of propaganda that he might see on TV. I have just a little small section on corruption this week. The FBI ousts leader as Patel fumes over attention to agency jet use. If you didn't hear about this story, essentially what happened is Kash Patel used a government jet to watch his girlfriend sing the national anthem at a wrestling match. So he's using these jets for private use. Well, attention came out of this. The agent, his name was Stephen Palmer, a 27-year veteran of the FBI, became the third head of the Critical Incident Response Group, which includes FBI pilots, to be fired or removed in Patel's short regime, adding to a year filled with retributive terminations. Patel was angered this week by social media posts and news stories calling attention to his use of an FBI jet that arrived in State College, Pennsylvania, where his girlfriend, country music artist Alexis Wilkins, sang the national anthem at a wrestling match, who said the individuals who spoke anonymously out of fear of retaliation. Well, with good rights, were they afraid of that retaliation? In other news from Kash Patel, they claimed that they had thwarted a Halloween terrorism plot. They were lauded for their, you know, great investigative work, quick, decisive action. Turns out, a Michigan lawyer says a Halloween terror plot that FBI Director Kash Patel described never existed. There are multiple stories on what actually occurred here. Apparently involved some teenagers, and the arrests came from conversations that were held online. And while we don't know the details of exactly what the supposed plot was, claims are that it was ISIS-related and that appears at this time to be unsubstantiated. Continuing on to the ever-unfolding ICE situation, San Jose, California this week unanimously passed an ordinance requiring federal ICE agents to be unmasked, setting up direct supremacy clause challenge. So this will likely continue to go to higher courts. But the masking has been a big deal, one of the biggest issues regarding ICE, because it is impossible to identify the person who is kidnapping you. If a group of men came up masked and tried to take me or a member of my family away, that would be terrifying. And that is part of the whole purpose here is terrorism. So San Jose says you have to unmask. And the Trump administration has made every indication that they're going to ignore this. It will be fought and we'll see where it goes. Meanwhile, the FBI now warns of criminals posing as ICE and urges agents to ID themselves. In a bulletin to law enforcement agencies, the FBI said criminal impersonators are exploiting ICE's image and urge nationwide coordination to distinguish real operations from fakes. I mean, duh. This is something that we've been saying for forever. Make them take their masks off. If you want to be able to distinguish real operations from fakes, let's know who we're dealing with here. I don't think the FBI themselves or even Homeland Security or ICE can properly really say whether or not something was carried out by ICE agents, because they all look the same. They put on a t-shirt, a Kevlar vest, and a mask over their face, buy a Temu badge, and we can whisk women away on the street. It's extremely hypocritical of the FBI to make these warnings, and they say, oh yes, well you should identify yourself. And yet they will fight against the actual orders that are being put in place for these same agents to unmask. This next one is terrifying and signals a very scary direction to head in. It says ICE plans cash rewards for private bounty hunters to locate and track immigrants. The Trump administration has already shown that they will hire their version of the brown shirt. In this case, we'll call them the red hats, right? Anyone who can meet sort of minimum threshold for physical capabilities and with a penchant for harassing brown people can essentially be given access to do so. And now it's looking like they're setting it up so that anyone can snitch on their neighbor, a family member, a coworker, and receive a monetary reward for doing so. It says companies hired by ICE would be given bundles of information on 10,000 immigrants at a time to locate. Under the plan, bounty hunters may receive monetary bonuses depending on how successfully they track down their targets and how many immigrants they then report to ICE. I think that ICE has essentially found itself with an issue of being able to scale up as quickly as they would like. Trump is reportedly upset at the numbers. He wants more. He wants it to be more violent, more widespread. And so this continuation of sort of actively recruiting people not only to carry out those arrests and deportations, but to do the searching, the hard part of finding immigrants, to detain. Stepping outside of ICE for just a moment, talking about the National Guard, the Pentagon is readying thousands of Guard Reaction Forces as the U.S. mission widens. Up to 23,500 service members are being readied and trained for civil unrest missions in U.S. cities. The Pentagon has ordered thousands of specialized National Guard personnel to complete civil unrest mission training over the next several months, an indication that the Trump administration's efforts to send uniformed military forces into urban centers, once reserved for extraordinary emergencies, could become the norm. This newly established quick reaction force by the Defense Department within the National Guard must be trained, equipped with riot control gear, and ready for deployment by January 1st. An existing separate but similar structure, the National Guard Reaction Force, is expected to complete civil unrest training and be fully operational by April 1st. The total size of the force will be 23,500 troops across all 50 states and 3 territories. Most states will supply 500 personnel for the reaction force, with the rest falling between 250 and 450. Those forces are typically used for emergencies like disaster relief, not as on-call troops for civil unrest. So we're weakening our ability to respond to natural disasters and actually provide beneficial aid to citizens of the United States. And instead, those same people, those same National Guard troops are being used to terrorize them. Donald Trump is essentially creating a task force that he can send anywhere in the nation, up to 24,000 troops, to put down what they call civil unrest, what may very well simply be troops showing up at polling centers on election day to intimidate or harass, to shut down any peaceful protest, and to squash dissenters. All right, now, I mentioned that I would touch back on the success that Democrats had this week in elections. Zohran Mamdani won in New York City, beating out Cuomo, who had been endorsed by Donald Trump days earlier, and the race for governor in Virginia, for lieutenant governor, and in many other races, Democrats won. In Virginia, it said that every single county moved to the left in this election, which is very interesting. It shows signs of discontent with Donald Trump's performance and Republicans in general, and hopefully an indication that, you know, most states will be activating more of their independent voters to get out and vote against Donald Trump's interests. Prop 50 in California also passed, which allows California to essentially do the same thing that Texas did with redistricting in a way that will benefit Democrats. It will add more Democratic positions in Congress. Now, okay, so all that is good news, but the Trump administration has had a rather predictable response, saying the following. So House Republicans are exploring ways to prevent Mamdani from being sworn in as New York City mayor if he wins on election day. So this was released before the results were announced. And it's been known for a while that Donald Trump has spoken about this idea of looking into deporting Mamdani. And in this case, it's talking about, this is in the New York Post, it says, House Republicans are exploring ways to prevent Mamdani from ever being sworn in as mayor, if he prevails in Tuesday's election, by using the U.S. Constitution's Insurrection Clause. It cites language in the post-Civil War 14th Amendment to the Constitution, barring from office anyone who engaged in insurrection or rebellion, or who has given aid or comfort to the enemies. The group argues that Mamdani's own statements calling to resist ICE could violate the prohibition. Once again, every accusation is a confession. This is precisely what Donald Trump was accused of and what occurred on January 6, 2021. Instead, they want to turn around and use it unjustifiably on the 34-year-old Mamdani. Trump slams California redistricting votes, says the votes are under review. He accused the California redistricting proposal on the ballot on Tuesday of being unconstitutional and said all mail-in ballots were under very serious legal and criminal review without giving any evidence for his allegations. This is an article in Reuters. Trump did not say what entities were reviewing the ballots. Funny that Texas just did this exact same thing, except they didn't give people the chance to vote on it. They simply just pushed it through. At the very least, California gave the people the chance to decide. Lastly, today, the White House is working on executive orders on elections, says press secretary. We've known that Donald Trump has had a desire to get rid of mail-in voting. We don't know if that's exactly what is being referred to here. Maybe you do by the time you're listening to this because it's been announced since I recorded this on Wednesday. But the White House is working on an executive order on elections, says Caroline Leavitt. She claims that it's in order to strengthen our elections in this country and to ensure that there cannot be blatant fraud, as we've seen in California with their universal mail-in voting system. So it seems obvious that that's what they're going to be doing, is targeting the mail-in voting. But as has been noted many times, we don't rule by executive order. Laws are not changed or made by executive order. This is something that would have to go through Congress. So while Donald Trump will make some grand announcement about this, it could set up some very interesting conflict, some butting of heads when it comes to the actual rollout around election time. It would be very interesting if he decrees it to be illegal, even though no actual change to the law occurs. Then we roll around to election time for midterms. He and his followers will claim that any state that used mail-in voting cannot be trusted. Of course, that will only be the results that go against him. They will act as if they have legal authority to deny the outcome. And even though that legal authority doesn't exist, in a game in which all the rules are being broken, will that matter? Will it matter to Trump? Will it matter to the outcome? And how does that sort of conflict get resolved? I don't know. To be seen, and we will continue to talk about it here on Breaking Down Collapse. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.